Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in tune, but the sun is eclipsed by the moon.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
And good evening to you, Ben, and hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone, indeed. And we're also available on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and as a podcast. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. The text number is 087-977-1032. Standard text rate supply. That's 087-977-1032. Before we start, John, just want to acknowledge a text that came in late last week. It was a bit too late for us. It's from Mark. I think he's in Tinnehealy, County Wexford, when we were talking last night about the International Space Station going over. And he managed to see it from where he was. So thank you, Mark, for your text. We always love to hear from anyone at all. Our text number is 087-977-1032. John, we're going to talk about your adventures last night in a moment. But first we'll get to what to see in the sky this week.
Isn't it a shame, really, that we don't get a chance to see Mercury more? It's one of those elusive planets that just is in view, but across the sun.
It's a difficult one to catch.
It's a difficult one to catch, but it still barely emerges very low in the bright dawn by the end of this week. And it's just above the horizon due east, and it's on its way to a good dawn showing the second week or so of October. So we can look forward to that if you haven't seen it yet. Venus is unfortunately getting almost unobservably low in the very bright dawn. And Mercury is on its way up to replace it there, so you're getting one against the other there. Mars, still very dim, 0.6, minus 0.6 to be exact, in Taurus. And it clears east-northeast, the horizon around 10 or 11 p.m. It's still quite hard to see, and it gains its altitude for the rest of the night. So it's four times as bright as Mars-coloured Aldebaran, if you know where that is in the sky. So that's a little challenge for you. And Jupiter, this is the one to watch. And it's very, very bright at the moment. And it comes to opposition this week on the 26th, which was just yesterday evening. And as twilight fades, spotted layering low in the east, which is where it appears. And after dark, Jupiter dominates the east, of course, blazing at minus 2.9 in Pisces, and it climbs higher across the southeast and stands at its highest in the south around midnight or just 1 a.m. in around that time. Saturn, it's quite dim as well at the moment, plus 0.5. It's not really worth a watch, neither, or Uranus or Neptune. They're always dim, though, that's the thing. Minus 5.7 and 7.8 respectively, so binoculars, a good pair of binoculars, that is, or a telescope to watch those planets. So that's really the one to watch just at the moment is Jupiter.
Okay, thank you, John, for that. Just a good pointer for Aldebaran. I think most people would know Orion and the belt of Orion. And if you follow the belt, the three stars in the belt from left to right and continue on that imaginary line, the next bright star you see is Aldebaran and Taurus. And then if you continue that, more or less, again, you'll see the Pleiades, the seven sisters. So, good in the sky this week, as you mentioned. Jupiter's at its maximum brightness. And on Wednesday, of course, you were mentioning Mercury and Venus. Venus, very low in the sky. But if you do manage to see it in the early hours of Wednesday morning, about 4 degrees above it, that is Mercury. And that's a good pointer for you there. Oh, and by the way, Saturday next, the 1st of October, is International Observe the Moon Night, which I never heard of that one before, but apparently, there you go. And next week is World Space Week.
Where is the moon for Observe the Moon Night?
I'm not sure what the phases are next week. Oh, no, well, it's about first quarter next week.
Actually, it's a good time to see it. Yeah, just that.
So. First quarter is actually next Monday, the 3rd, the early hours of the morning. Actually, it's going to be the closest first quarter moon of 2022. Over the next coming weeks, we'll talk about the partial solar eclipse. So we should, with a bit of luck, we'll be able to see some of it here in Ireland. But speaking of the moon, it is not up at the moment. It's actually, it set about 15 minutes ago, but it will rise again tomorrow morning, just after 20 past 10 tomorrow morning. It's we're just past new moon, and when it rises tomorrow morning, it'll be a 7% waxing crescent moon. It will be due south just after 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. At that stage, it will have grown slightly to 8%. And when it sets tomorrow at 8:05 in the evening, it'll be all the way 10%. So that's, you should be able to see the 10% moon, assuming you have a clear enough horizon. And as for the sun, well, that rises tomorrow at 7:21 a.m. here in Dublin. That's 13 minutes later than a week ago. It'll cross the meridian at 1:15 p.m., which is 3 minutes earlier than a week ago. And the sun sets 9 minutes past 7 tomorrow, a whole 17 minutes earlier than a week ago. And from then until 7:43, we'll have civil twilight. And then after that, we'll have nautical twilight until 8:24 p.m. And then astronomical twilight we'll have then until 6 minutes past nine when nighttime begins. Astronomical twilight ends and officially nighttime begins, which means the sun will be greater than 18 degrees below the horizon. So that's a whole 4 minutes and 10 seconds less daylight tomorrow than today, when our daylight will be 11 hours 48 minutes between sunrise and sunset. That's a whole 30 minutes less than a week ago. So, it's closing in very fast.
Yes, indeed. And if you are an International Space Station follower, in about an hour's time, just less than 9:06 until 9:10 p.m., you will get a chance to see the space station cruising across our skies from the southwest across for about 4 minutes. Altitude around 40 degrees, so it's in there about normal.
Not bad. It's a good pass. Yeah. Nice bright one, too.
Yeah, -3.
-3 degrees. Yeah. You should have no problem, assuming it's anyway clear at all.
Yep, and we were lucky last week that it flew over just while we were on air, and somebody did get to see it, so that was Mark, so that was good.
Yeah,
so.
Alan, and he's in Kildare, I think. It was clouded out there, but... Mm-hmm. We had a text from, say, Mark from Tinnehealy, and he managed to see it.
Now, what about this Artemis fella?
Oh, they rolled the building, they rolled the rocket back into the building because of the weather in Florida. Yeah, delayed again. I'm not sure when they, do you know when the next launch window is open?
Not even sure
they know.
The strange thing about it is that they had done all the tests for the fuel and everything, and then suddenly the weather closed in. So they had to scrub today's launch, so I'm not sure. If anybody does, just give us a text on 087-977-1032. And just for a little bit of advice as to when we might be able to see the launch of the Artemis mission. Mm. I think the news that hit us earlier on this morning, if you were up in the early hours, or certainly later on when the pictures started coming through, is the DART spacecraft, if you want to call it a spacecraft. And if we cast our minds back to November the 24th, 2021, and this is when the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket launched from California, USA with the DART. Now, the DART is the Double Asteroid Redirection Test mission and was directed by NASA, of course. So it reached its destination this morning in the early hours. To be honest, I don't know because I meant to stay up. I was out elsewhere and I was just getting home at that stage. So,
well, I suppose the bottom line is they crashed it.
They did.
Into Didymus at a ferocious speed.
it's ridiculous, really. It's, 14,000 miles per hour, which is about 22,000 kilometers per hour. Into the little moon that goes round Didymus, which is called
Dimorphos,
yeah. And it happened at 23:14 GMT last night, which was just coming up to 11:15. And that was 10 months after blasting off from California on its pioneering mission. So the interesting thing about this is its mass when it took off was 610 kilos. And at time of impact, it was 550 kilos. So evidently lost a bit of fuel, burnt a bit of fuel on its redirectional orbits, etc. It had a couple of sensors for navigation, of course, and a sun sensor, a star tracker, and a 20 cm telescope. That's what a waste of a good telescope. Really? Okay.
The important thing, of course, John, is that the reason why they did it.
Yeah.
It's not just pure vandalism. No, the whole aim, of course, is to try to nudge that little 160-meter long or diameter little asteroid, see if it can move its orbit, change its orbit just a little bit. And they reckon they might change it something like about 1% of the time that it takes to go around the larger one, or it's about 10 minutes. But again, the whole objective of that is that sooner or later there will be an asteroid coming that will impact the Earth. How soon and how big is another matter.
Yep.
It's all part of the plan, basically, to protect the Earth and all life on it.
Yeah, but the calculations involved of getting this spot on 10 months later, and the fact that the little one, and it's Dimorphos is what it's called, and to hit it exactly when they had planned at 16,000 or 22,000 kilometres an hour. it's just mind-boggling.
After 10 months, 11 yeah. million kilometres.
And also the fact that this little moon orbits its bigger rock, if you want to call it a rock, by 7 inches a second. So that has to be taken into consideration. And just 10 days before the impact, there was a little Italian spacecraft called Lysias Cube, which zoomed past Dimorphos just after the collision to observe its immediate effects as well. So there was a couple of photographs taken as it went past as well. So the asteroid itself, no threat at all to Earth, and this is one of the reasons that they did it, and the fact that it was a duo sort of thing, because they can keep an eye on it as to see how far away that Dimorphos would move away from Didymos. And it'll be interesting to see the photographs. Now, I did see photographs this morning on the news, etc. And it's a really strange... it's like...
You saw the video, didn't you? There's a video on APOD, Astronomy Photograph of the Day.
Yeah, I'm going... Once I get home this evening, later on, I'll have a good study of it.
And you can see it zipping past the main body, Didymos, on its way to Dimorphos.
Yeah, it's absolutely remarkable.
Crash. And the other... interesting part about that is, of course, that's not the end of it either. That mission was a NASA mission, but following it up in 2 years' time, ESA hoped to launch a follow-up to that. It's called a HERA mission, H-E-R-A, and that's basically going to go also to Didymos and have a look at the effect that this impact had on it and the size of the crater, and they hope to be able to tell more about what the asteroid is composed of. Its mass and its elemental composition, I believe. And with that, and having measured the effect of the impact, they'll be able to use that data then to calculate what the type of force or kinetic energy they need to impart on a real threat. Not if it ever comes this way, but it will come someday. Maybe not tomorrow. Maybe not today. Someday. It may be 1,000 years away or a million years away.
But I reckon one hits the Earth every 100 years or thereabouts. A good big one.
We had Tunguska in 1908.
Yeah.
And Chelyabinsk was kind of small in comparison, but it did a lot of damage. And then, of course, 66 million years ago, you had the big one that wiped out 75% or 80% of all life on Earth.
Yeah, the study...
including the dinosaurs, of course, what put their reign on Earth to a stop and allowed the evolution of mammals. But we humans, Homo sapiens, wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that. Most likely we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that huge asteroid impact.
A little bit of a study has shown
that we want another one.
There might have been a second asteroid that hit shortly after the first one, so there you go. Lights out, I'm afraid. And that's what it was, 66 million years ago, thereabouts, plus or minus a year or two.
Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text number is 0876... I've forgotten the number. 087-977-1032. You'd think I'd know that one by now. 087-977-1032. Standard text rates apply.
Mm.
Now, ESA have named... They have a shortlist of astronauts, a shortlist of seven people who they have named who will be part of the Gateway mission, which is the space station that's going to go around the moon. And one of those people is going to be the first European to land on the moon. So we have the names. And you were in the presence of one of them last night, I believe.
Yes, I was. Tim Peake was in Dublin City Centre last night. And I was lucky enough to, about 8 or 9 months ago, grab a ticket or two for myself and my good lady. So we went to see them in the Onboard Gosh Theatre. Just before we went into the auditorium, we met a very nice couple who were chatting just for a few minutes. And he was really, really, really looking forward to the whole thing that was going to go on. And it was, his journey to the space station was the way that he put it. So it was actually very good. It was 2 hours of pure fun. It just went like that. You know, it's incredibly how quickly. And then they give sound effects and visual effects and all that sort of stuff as well. So it was good fun. So anyway, hello to you two. I forgot to get your names. But if you are listening, 087-977-1032.
I'll keep an eye on the text machine.
So I just tell you a little bit. He went and started with his story from childhood when he was 13 and he started to fly. He said he always wanted to fly. Just be up in the air. He didn't care how he did it. He said he was just a normal type of a character and did ordinarily at school and things like that and got D in maths and things like that. So that just proves that you don't have to be. But the important thing was that you need to get out into the outdoors. You need to become a pilot. You need to do this. You need to be a test pilot. You need to basically not sort of give out about anything when you're around. So if you're going to spend 6 months of your time with somebody in the International Space Station, you don't want to be in bad humor at all, ever. And this is what they look for. And he said that they push you right to the limit. They would take you out into the middle of nowhere, dump you out with a tent, a parachute, and say, survive for 3 or 4 days. And if you get on, he was always smiling. I say nothing at all phases Tim Peake. And this is one of the reasons that he has been to the space station and evidently on the list for to go to the moon, perhaps, as well. And I'd love to see that as well. But when they arrived up to the space station, they were in the Russian spacecraft. And everything is automated. And when they come close, the whole system is just, their capsule is dragged in and just docked automatically. One of the thrusters failed. Which meant that they missed the first time. They reversed back out.
They keep banging off the side.
Yeah, no, they didn't bang. No, they don't. They're trained and trained and trained. They know exactly what to do. And the second time, the automated, it still didn't work. So the Russian, I can't remember his name, actually. He just took the control and says, I'm in charge here. And of course, they got the word from Mission Control down in Kazakhstan. And he says, hurry up, lads, it's going to get dark soon, which you don't think about. Well, they know about it, but they're orbiting the Earth at incredible speeds every 90 minutes or so, so we had to do it by hand. But the third attempt, they got in. And when the door opened, he says it was extremely cramped just where they get through. Mm. And then they push past, and they see this wide expanse of area. But he was expecting to have to get straight into work as soon as he landed. One of the guys who was there already said, would you like a cup of tea? And maybe a bacon sarnie. And of course, from watching Tim Peake on the television program with Heston Blumenthal going back a number of years, but 3 years ago before the launch, they had to pass all of the food so they wouldn't have any microbes or anything wrong when they pack it. And it was like a little pull ring type of a can that was this was in. He says the most important thing that he did was open the thing and sniff to get the bacon, sorry, and then he ate it. So all of his food was prepared, or most of it was prepared by Heston Blumenthal, if you know his name, from the cooking world.
Yes.
And it was that was very interesting. That would certainly interest my wife because she loves cooking. And Heston Blumenthal, I would love to go to his restaurant sometime for the experience.
He's very experience. He's artistic as much as it's an artist as he is as much as a chef. Yes. Yeah.
But the spacewalk that Tim had to do meant that he was himself and his other Tim. There was two Tims up there, and they had to go to the other end of the space station. He says the weird thing about it was getting out of the capsule and looking down 400 and something miles to Earth. And the natural thing is to cling on. And he was told that if you feel a little bit anxious at all, just wiggle your toes and that'll go away. So he did, and it did, strangely enough. But he went out to the end by the tether, of course, and they have three tethers. They have the main one that they'd latch on, 1-2, 1-2, all the way along. Then they have the string that comes out from the capsule. If something desperately bad goes wrong, they can just, it's like a bit of fishing wire or something.
Somebody
like that.
Pulls them back.
They get pulled back indeed. Mm. So he showed us a picture of what he was looking at back along the space station he'd just come out of, and that was, he says he was quite happy with that. Then he looked the other way, and it was like a scene from the Titanic. There was nothing. Remember the bow thing when Kate and Leopold, or Leonardo, whatever his name is, were looking out the front of the ship and just were looking into space, and that's, he said, there was nothing, absolutely nothing. He said it's really weird. Well, I mean, anyway, I could talk about this, but coming back down again, they were cramped into the space capsule, and they were told to brace and put their head back on landing, and you could see them cringing on the pictures, waiting for the thump, and suddenly it was a thump. Oh no! And he was expecting then for the capsule door to open, and they began, you know, the smell of cut grass and all that sort of stuff. But the door opened, and a big Russian guy came in and pulled everybody out. And he was expecting to smell the lovely grass and fresh air and everything, but it was burnt. Everything was burnt because the rockets had burnt everything underneath them.
Oh,
so
everything
was really weird.
Retro rockets that flow down just before it lands.
Incredible. So I could go on about it all night, but if you ever get a chance to see Tim Peake in person somewhere, go and see it. It's well worth it.
Thank you, John, for that. Just by way of the other candidates, are Francis Thomas Pesquet, just reminds you, these are the seven astronauts that European Space Agency announced were among the candidates to go to on the Gateway mission, which is the space station that's going to orbit the moon. And at least one of these, or one of them, will apparently walk on the moon before the end of this decade. They are Francis Thomas Pesquet, Britain's Tim Peake, whom you just spoke about, John, Germany's Alexander Gerst and Matthias Maurer, and Italy's Luca Parmitano and Samantha Cristoforetti. Samantha is actually up on the International Space Station as we speak and will take over as commander shortly there. Now, Alan has just reminded us about Artemis, that the storm that caused the delay, of course, was a tropical storm Ian. He also says it's raining in Kildare.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Alan. And I think he sent us another one. Yes, we got there in the end. He said,
yes, indeed.
But,
so it's hard to believe. We've been studying and landing on the moon or thereabouts since
72. Anyway, knows the answer to that one. From
50-odd years where Neil Armstrong touched himself on the moon. And we also have been studying on Mars for over 50 years now at this stage. And Mars seemingly is littered with over 7 tons of trash from the robotic space exploration. This is remarkable. So where does all the debris come from? And it's three main sources, of course. It's discarded hardware, inactive spacecraft, and, of course, crashed spacecraft. So The 9 inactive spacecraft on the surface of Mars make up the next type of debris. And these are the Mars 3 lander, the Mars 6 lander, Viking 1 lander, Viking 2 lander, and the Sojourner rover, and the formerly lost Beagle 2 lander, and of course the Phoenix lander, and the Spirit rover. These are all defunct. Of course, there's still a lot going on up there with opportunity and perseverance and curiosity still going there. So it's just going to add up, and we haven't even been there in person. We just send bits and pieces up, and there's photographs all over the internet, which give us loads of photographs from what you think was a spider to rocks and tents and spent capsules and all sorts of things. So
that's the 7 tons of rubbish.
Yeah, 7 tons of rubbish, or 15,694 pounds of human trash from the 50 years of robotic exploration.
Thank you, John, for that. Just going back to the International Space Station, of course, the NASA astronaut Frank Rubio and 2 cosmonauts arrived at the International Space Station last Wednesday. That brought the numbers of the residents on board to 10. There was, along with Frank Rubio, there was Russian cosmonaut Sergei Prokopyev and Dmitry Petelin. And they docked, as I say, last Wednesday, after only about 2-3 hours after takeoff, and they will join the current Expedition 67 crew. And then the 2 cosmonauts and 1 astronaut that went up and about 6 months ago, they'll be heading down shortly. Oh, but before that, there will be some, there'll be a SpaceX crew 5 on board, another 4 people. And so that, according to my calculation, then there'll be for a very short time, there'll be 14 people on board the International Space Station.
All queuing for the loo.
All fighting over the food and queuing for the loo.
That's it, I'm afraid.
Ah, yes, and I had some lovely stories about expansion of the universe.
You leave it with me, I'll do it next week.
More of that anon. Okay, thank you, John, and thank you for your texts as well, of course. Of course, Alan tells us December 7th, the 72 launched. I think they're talking about the Apollo 17, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Yes. But that's all the time we have this evening. The email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to John for his news items to James Sweeney and to Conor Lennon also. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, that's Hello China. 9 o'clock, we have Bren Lynott with the Threads is his music program. And 11 p.m, we have Ear to the Globe with Nigel Woods. And midnight to 2 a.m, we have After Hours with Dave Barry. But please join John on his Tobler next week and the week after. I'm off on my belated summer holidays, and he'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. And say good night, John.
And a very good night, John. And I'll see you next week. Bye bye.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.